All right. So are you feeling different?
Yes.
Good. Feeling a little lighter? A little less dense. The social integrator has a very rudimentary form of consciousness, you might say, because it's a thought form compiled with people, by people in agreement that this is the way it should be organized, things should be prioritized. And so the social integrator is given also an intention by the group as ego validation for those who are in the group. And the intention is to gain more adherence to the group, more members of the group. Let's grow the group. It's so similar on an energy level to what is essentially who you are, and i.e. you have an urge to grow. That's just natural to you. So the social integrator, composed of all the collective intentions and thoughts and philosophies of the members, holds an intention to gain more members, to validate the core group that's already there, and to bring resources into the group to have more power, to have more impact on other social integrators. Social integrators can be in conflict with each other, which comes to a really kind of problematic situation if you are functioning within more than one social integrator, which you are, that may be at odds with each other. It can be rather difficult for you to figure out what to do, when, and how. But overall, you generally find and kind of find your social integrator, and you're pulled in. You're pulled in by some kind of attractor, some kind of idea, concept, philosophy that you feel is more aligned with who you are, or that will give you the benefits that you want, or the forms that will make you happy, you think. That's the first intention of the social integrator, is to get more adherence in it. The second intention, of course, is to feed on the adherence so that it grows more powerful in the subconscious and unconscious levels. A third intention of a social integrator is to establish dominance amongst social integrators. Hence, you have wars. You have religious wars, political wars. Doesn't matter what the excuse is. A social integrator loves wars. It loves violence. It loves fighting. It loves mayhem, because it feeds on that. And your whole world and all the cultures of your world are based upon and oriented around all the social integrators that function there. Some social integrators are worldwide, or in a sense given deference to worldwide, pretty much. Or some are just certain areas that they're for that area. And so you have, for example, in the Middle East, you have social integrators who are at odds with social integrators of the West. And it's very difficult to negotiate any kind of peace talks when you have two different social integrators vying to be first place, one up, man code, rules. The same principle comes into play in personal, intimate relationships. Whatever social integrators you have been working with, functioning within, having allegiance or adherence to. And the social integrators of your partner, mate, associate, friend, well, can clash, can create conflict. You can be part of the same essential social integrator. You can get into this relationship social integrator that's so common that we talked about already. And you can have plenty of conflict in there. Social integrators don't mind that there's conflict amongst their members. They just feed on it. But what it comes down to in relationships is that when you're playing unconsciously, when you're in alignment with social integrators and you're not consciously aware of their influence, then you go into relationships with agendas. You play games. You may pretend you are totally being open and transparent, but sometimes it's just a game, and underneath, you want the other person to change. You bring in assumptions, beliefs, ideas, expectations into a relationship in alignment with that ideal. And so does your partner. You know, in business partnerships, the ideal is kind of like the earlier days of Lennon McCartney, you know? Become kind of a two-person institution to work together in harmony. And that's what they did, literally and figuratively. Until later on, of course. So this time we're going to talk about conflict in relationships. Now, in every relationship seminar there is, all right, every single one, and most of them, they all focus on conflict resolution. There are people who make good money in the corporate world, corporations being quite a very powerful social integrator, teaching about conflict resolution and personnel management and handling that. And the most enlightened of these teachers of corporate America, and indeed around the planet, are the ones that encourage corporations to look at their employees not as just simple resources that are plugged into various jobs, but to actually match the employee and that employee's temperament and style with the correct job function. That gets the best results, creates more harmony, there's less conflict. Conflicts can be worked through a little bit more easily. But just as in corporations you have hierarchies, since they are all that military model, that warrior model, you have issues between bosses and their subordinates, control, manipulation, games, expectations, assumptions. And underneath it, in personal relationships, in corporate relationships, work relationships, even in counseling and consulting between a consultant and clients, both partners want to be right. You may think that in a consultant or like a psychologist, that a person comes to be worked with a psychologist, to look at their life and resources, or a life coach or whatever, and you think that they could come in and really be open to change. And a few of them are, if they're conscious. But how many people argue for their limitations? Yes, but. Yes, but. But it doesn't work for me. And this is perhaps the greatest lie the social integrators give you. Yes, it does work for you when you're conscious. Now, in an interpersonal relationship, the first thing that you seek in a relationship is the first level of love. And this can be any kind of relationship. It can be in your family, it can be in your business, it can be in your love life, it can be in friendship, groups, whatever. You first seek to feel safe. Safety is paramount. Now, social integrators do not encourage feelings of safety. Perhaps you've noticed. There's always a threat of exclusion or rejection and separation. With the intention by the social integrator to manipulate your behavior so that you'll conform to the rules, to the energies of the social integrator and keep giving energy in. But you as a conscious being need to realize that you want to go into a relationship, and not only do you want to assure that the relationship is safe for you, you want to give safety to the relationship. And in order to do that, you have to know how to create safety and the energy of safety. There are many people who are terrified of even going into a relationship. They don't feel safe enough to even be in one. They've been burned too many times, hurt, destroyed, messed up too many times. And not just with love relationships, but with friendships, everything. There's too many fears. They don't feel safe as themselves. So you first have to get safety inside you. You're not going to find someone else to provide you with safety. That's your infant self looking, seeking to be nursed, nurtured, seeking to feel that safety so you can survive. Well, dear ones, you've not just survived, you've thrived. You have become more. You have grown up, become beautiful adult light beings. But if you're not careful, you can still get fooled by the social integrators into feeling you're not safe. If you can be in a relationship and feel safe, you create the foundation of safety for the other as well. Most often, they can step up to the plate and share with you a certain amount of safety. It enables your partner, as well as yourself, to step outside the unconscious patterns given you by the social integrators. So how do you create safety out of thin air? All right. You know, sometimes when a situation is threatening, it helps to step back and detach from it. Well, that's in a sense what you can do. Not to push it away. Not to numb out. not to escape, not to get on your high horse, look down at the other person and judge them and see yourself as so much more and better and all. You've tried that, done that, didn't work. What it's about, though, is stepping away from the emotional intensity or the excess energy, the big deal energy, and stepping into your observer self. Now, who is this observer self? You've used your observer self many times to evaluate something, to sense something, to really kind of get a hang of whatever's going on and figure things out in a kind of a self-caring, self-valuing way. That observer self has enough detachment from the games. And games are never safe. Games are always undermining of safety. And you can smell a game faster than anything. Just a slight tone of voice, a body position, a word, and you've got all your weapons and shields and everything up. So the detached one, you step into the observer self. It's important for you to understand who your observer self is. This is your true spiritual adult. This is the you who knows more who you are. It's in a sense a notch above your daily self, your mundane, usual self bumbling around doing whatever you do. If you work on being conscious all day long, being aware of what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you're doing, what you're choosing, what beliefs are coming up, and if you're in that process all day long, then when you get to your observer self, there's a sense of a high that comes with it. But even if you don't, even if you somehow just lose it and you go back into being unconscious here and there in spots during the day, when you wake up during your day, you go, oh, this is my button's getting pushed. I need to respond differently to it. As soon as you create that awareness, bang, you are in your observer self. You are in your power. You're in choice, capable of making choices. You're also in a place to where you can love and where you can give safety to yourself and to the other. If you don't take it personally, if you can step into your observer self quickly, before you go into taking it personally in a knee-jerk reaction, automatic, unconscious response, you can have glorious relationships with all sorts of people. With people that, you know, with mainstream people who are going around really unconscious of being slaves to the social integrators. You can have wonderful experiences with these regular guys and gals. Every person on the planet can be fun that you encounter. Now, there's some that are not fun, but we would say that you operate at a resonance already, that kind of cancels out the really terrible ones. Okay? It cancels out the people who are not only unconscious but filled with so much rage and are ready to blow. You don't get those. Unless you think very poorly of yourself. And then you might have to attract all sorts of weird people in order to wake you up. But in your normal, everyday life, living where you like to live, in your neighborhood, in your, you know, your roots that you take to various stores and stuff. We doubt you're going to ever encounter, you know, some kind of guy with a rifle who's going to kill a whole bunch of people, including you. You're going to avoid that. Because that's in another reality. Now, the more conscious you remain, and we say conscious and not analytical, conscious and knowing, connected to your true motivation, then you are on a higher vibration and you only attract to yourself safe, relatively safe, interactions. Now, a way to also bring in safety is for you to recognize that you have the power. You have the creative power. Everything that's in your life, every single thing, down to the tiniest detail, is synchronistically put together for you, specifically and perfectly for this moment in time. Now, before you start giving your power away, thinking, oh, it's put together for me, then there's some kind of, you know, creative power, and they're saying, oh, well, let's see what this little person wants, and let's see what we need to do for that. We want to remind you that you're part of that team. Okay? It's your intention. You gave your unseen friends, your spirit guides, your friends on the other side, the tasks. They enjoy doing this, but you gave them the job of lining stuff up for you, specifically for you to clear your issues, expand on your themes, and have a really great life. Okay, so if you can recognize that what level of frequency you're in will determine how much fun you're going to have in your relationships. And we're even going to include people you've been in relationships with for a while and have chronic difficulties with. People who don't seem to change. People who have bad attitudes. And somehow or another you're stuck with them and for some reason or another. Even that can change. Not because you want to change them. To be able to be in a relationship is to be totally accepting of yourself and totally accepting of the other person. And we know if you have a lot of history with somebody that's been very unpleasant, this is hard to do right away. If there's history of rejection and pain and suffering with someone, you really just don't want to go there and hang out and smile and be nice. Because it could whammy you again. But the point is, you're not a victim. You make the choices, really, underneath it all. You align it with your intention. And if your intention is to be safe, create safety for others, with no judgment on anybody, loving yourself, valuing yourself, and being open to fun and adventure and anticipating some magic to happen, by golly, all sorts of magic can start to happen. Because when you create safety for someone else, they may not respond the very first time you do it. You've got to learn how to hold that energy of safety or continue it. Make it a natural function of your relating. And once it becomes natural and you're acclaiming it as natural, you'll start to see changes, different responses from other people. When you are in a space of your own empowerment, your own path, your own way, and you have no judgment on what other way another person is on, two things happen. One, regardless of your external circumstances, you start to get happier. And that's a very good thing. When you're happier and more empowered, you have more self-esteem, you feel better about yourself, you start anticipating that your life can improve, and it will. And the second thing is that if that relationship that's been giving you a hard time is not for you, or even if it is for you, you will reach a point where it becomes obvious, known to both of you. See, a lot of times you say, well, this relationship doesn't work for me. But the other person says, huh? It works for me. Maybe they want to stay in the box. No matter what you do, you cannot push another person onto your spiritual path. Never, ever try to do that. Never try to convert anybody. Because all you're really doing is saying, your social integrator is not as good as mine. Even here, in this seminar, those of you and us, by our alignment with each other's energies, we have created here a social integrator. The orientation of the social integrator, however, has been vibrationally lifted. And it's about giving you, enabling you, your power. But it still creates some construct where you come together in harmony. So recognize, even in the best spiritual workshops, you're in a social integrator of its own. And so even there, if there's a consistent amount of workshops and so forth, like it becomes a series and there's a lot of people in it, pretty soon you start discovering people playing games. There's the in crowd, there's the higher echelon, and there's everybody else. All sorts of stuff goes on. You'll notice hierarchies will naturally form. This is not where you're headed in the future, and we'll get more into creating the new template tomorrow. But in your personal relationships, you have to be able to establish complete and total safety. Emotional safety for you. To do that, you have to, absolutely have to be in choice and in your power. And recognize the universe is working to your benefit. And it's not trying to punish you for being a bad boy, bad girl. It's not punishing you or withdrawing success from you because you are stupid or inadequate or you didn't work hard enough for what it is you wanted. That's all social integrator stuff. Simply speaking, and the reason we're repeating is because this is an important key piece you must remember if you want to create safety and sustain safety. And that is to know that this universe is working to your benefit. This world is beneficial to you. Everything that comes to you, even the challenges, even the toughest of times, will give you some kind of gift. No matter how difficult or painful or ugly it appears to be. How many people who have had cancer and gone through all this crazy stuff and went into remission and said, that was one of the greatest gifts I ever got. As ironic as it sounds, they recognized that there was a tremendous benefit that came from their healing of cancer. You can have these benefits in relationships. But you gotta stick with who you are. Always. Do not let the social integrators seduce you. And also, the social integrators want you to feel insecure. And when you're insecure about the affection, attention, or friendship, or whatever, of your partner, you will inadvertently test them. So you need to know your motivations. If you're insecure, you want to know for sure. I want to be reassured that you care about me. I want to be reassured you're my friend, that you're loyal to me. Who's speaking? Definitely not the spiritual adult, but the child, maybe. I feel insecure. The adolescent. Do I belong or not? And sometimes you can drive the other person really crazy, just irritate the heck out of them by pestering them in one way or another, implying, slipping in a little game here, talking with a certain tone, and so on, hoping that somehow or another they'll say, you know, I think you're the best. I like you a lot. Without directly asking. And if you have been on the receiving end of this game, it makes you angry. Stop doing that. Don't guilt me into being nice to you. Have you ever been guilt-tripped by someone? Of course. It sets you up for that by the social integrator, except for a few people. They're known as psychopaths or these people don't ever seem to feel guilt or remorse for what they do. And unfortunately, a lot of those gravitate to the top in your culture because when you feel guilty, you lose your power like that. So any manipulation to make you feel guilty is to take away your power. Thus, if someone tries to make you feel guilty and you feel that little feeling coming on, you must stop it immediately because you don't feel safe when that happens. You're being manipulated and you must step into your observer self, and you also must be very careful not to manipulate anyone else by guilt, ever. It is not energetically correct. That said, what if someone you are already in a partnership with just loves to manipulate by guilt? Then you have to begin to respond differently, with love, without any judgment, retaliation, resistance, rebellion, shut down, running away, nothing. No more outs. No more negative strategies. No more victim strategies. That's what they are. Be in your power. And be loving. And just simply be you. In your power. Do not accept guilt. You deserve all the best. You deserve to be a winner all the time. You deserve everything that you desire to have. You deserve to be loved and valued. You deserve it all. You deserve to have the best parking space. Not because, and here's where your ego comes in, not because you're just more important than other people, or you're have more positive intentions towards the planet. No, it's simply speaking because this is your reality. This is your world. If people are offended by you, or you're afraid to offend people, and you fall for that, you're guilty. And when you're guilty, you get punished. You will see to it. You'll see that you will get punished. If you judge someone, or judge other people, they will not support you. I mean, really, if somebody judged you, would you support that person? Oh, here, let me help you. I would love to give my energy to you while you judge me. No. We had a friend once that we spoke with who was building his business, and he wanted it to go big. But he really looked down on the masses, the unconscious masses. It's like he was too good for all of them. He was an elitist, spiritual elitist. You'll find this all over the place. Spiritual egos abound. You can be egotistical about anything, really. You can be homeless, and amongst you and other homeless, you can fight for top dog right there. The whole dynamic is still there. You have a social integrator for all the homeless people in this neighborhood, whatever. So you want to be free of it. Do not judge the unwashed masses, the unconscious ones. No. Have love and compassion for them. If you feel guilty, if you kind of go around with this kind of little guilt load on you, you generally put it on the back, you put it on your shoulder somewhere, or carry it somewhere on your back. If you have back problems, there may be some guilt back there. If you carry guilt around, then you're going to find ways in which to undermine yourself. You're not going to receive the love you want. You could judge other people. And if you have a little guilt back there, you'll punish yourself for that. It's amazing. If you carry around guilt, you will punish yourself in all sorts of ways by denying you what is rightfully yours in your reality. You see, your reality is so structured that when you take your privilege, your right, of your reality supporting you 100%, without guilt or fear in your motivation, then you have the willingness to have what you want. If you feel guilty, you don't have the willingness to have. So our friend, who was looking down on all the unwashed masses, just could not get his business to go big. He could not reach people. They would not respond. Like, what? Why I'm out here leading. Why aren't they following me? I always said, well, why would they follow you? You don't like them. You're an elitist. They resent you. Why should they follow you? You need to let go of all that judgment. And he slowly did, grudgingly, because he liked judging. It's hard for him to stop that, but he did. He did for the most part, and his business began to thrive. Your relationship will thrive if you let go of the judgment. It's not your job to point out your partner's failings, where they missed their cues from their reality, where they're not taking their power and doing it right. You're the only one who's doing that. You do that for you, but don't do it for your partner. Let them find their own way. Don't try to keep pushing them to a seminar. Don't keep putting books in front of them. You need to read this. Unless they're willing. Because the more that you try to help them, the more resistance you're going to get. Think about it. If your ego's on the line and receiving help means there's something wrong with you, you're going to resist. Simple. The key to a really great relationship is to understand the social integrator. That's why we spent a whole section on it. And recognize that your partner in a relationship is run by a social integrator too. And if your partner is not as conscious as you, you still can know where they're coming from. Because they're in that social integrator. They have the same pressures, the anticipations, the expectations. They still want their ego to feel self-important. They want to be important and valued. You know that when you give people compliments and show appreciation and value to them, have you noticed how they respond? Their ego goes, oh, a little validation. This is love. And they respond to you. But if you, like our friend, think, oh, I don't want to do that. Ooh. Why should I do all that for them? That's just supporting their ego. Well, they're in a social integrator in which that translates as love. When you're conscious, it doesn't. Somebody can come and give you all sorts of compliments and appreciate you, and you can take it genuinely, but you don't give it to your self-importance. As soon as you give it to your self-importance, you have excess energy, and it's like calling the balancing forces. Ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a, over here. Time to calm, feed. So when you have a conflict in a personal relationship, in order to go through any kind of conflict, any kind of disagreement, the first way to do it is to first know where you stand, what your ideas are, and we are going to say, not your justifications. No justifications. That's a guilt trip. That's how the guilt shows up. You're justifying yourself. It's a form of defense. The problem is a lot of times you justify to yourself, or you try to justify to them, but mostly to yourself. Have you ever noticed in your head that you're telling yourself your story? And in your story, you're justifying what you do and the way you do it. You're justifying as if there's somebody who's saying you're probably doing it wrong. You should be doing it some other way. You're inside yourself says, no, this is why I do this and I choose this and that and so forth and so on. And that's why I'm doing it. And inside yourself, you're feeling hit by guilt and fear from the social integrator, a threat that you have internalized as a potential judgment of you, and then you answer it with your own story. Nobody else is involved. Okay? You continue the whole routine inside your head. Unless you're conscious and you can stop it. So you can step into your observer self, in your power and your self-esteem, and without any judgment of yourself or the other, with no guilt, owning this is your reality, you have the right to everything good. It's yours. Your whole reality is yours. You don't really get this. The social integrator says nothing belongs to you. You have to work hard for it. You have to fight for everything. Yeah, we want you to fight for it because we feed on that. The more struggle, more effort, the more push and drive you put into something, the bigger the deal you make it. Oh, yum, yum, yum. The balancing forces want you. So, in a conflict, no justification, no defense. Accept yourself as you are. No need to explain anything. Because as soon as you start explaining, what does the other person feel? They think I'm wrong. Darn it. No, I'm not wrong. I'm right. They're wrong. And you got a conflict. Then they're going to have to explain themselves. Now, if you can do it consciously, it's phenomenal. It's wonderful. If you can do it without your internal guilt, feeling defensive, if you say, I was looking at it this way, and that's what I had as my intention, and I was thinking that and feeling that, and the other person can do the same thing, you've got a fantastic opportunity to lift beyond that level and go to a whole higher level of spiritual integration in your relationship. When the channel and Daniel discovered this, they'd finally, they would have this argument, and then they would go off and they would cool down, and then they would come back and they would debrief and analyze the argument and figure out where they were coming from and what they were thinking and feeling. And they would be coming from two different places with two different opinions or ideas or choices or whatever. But by the time they got through with this, both of them were taking the other's points of view. So it became moot what they did, how they did it. It didn't matter anymore. They were at peace because neither of them felt right or wrong, good or bad, better or worse. There was no ego separation. They could take the other person's point of view just as easily as their own, because they understood it now. So in your relationship, seek to understand the point of view of your partner from a compassionate point of view, understanding that they may be caught up a little more in the social integrator than you are. No judgment, just think, well, what about it, you know? Like, for example, the channel was working with two women who were having an issue in their dynamics. And one was insecure and had been martyring herself for someone and came into the session and said, you know, I was just feeling really tired and depleted because this other friend took all my energy and I gave it all to her and didn't rebuild myself. So I came over to my other friend here and I wanted some nurturing. I wanted some support. I wanted her to be happy to see me. So my intention was to get her to say she was happy to see me. What this woman did is that she went and started asking questions and trying to have a conversation with a friend who had just finished having a shower and was trying to blow dry her hair and stuff like that. And didn't really want to carry on a conversation yet. That delay made the first one feel rejected. Oh, they will not change their priorities for me instantly. They won't come out with their hair wet and love me first. You see the nuance of intention? Do you see the motivation? The other one, meanwhile, was irritated that the first gal was out there yelling, you know, from the other room and trying to carry a conversation while she was still trying to fix her hair. So she got irritated and annoyed. Did this help how the other one felt? No. It felt like a rejection, of course. But once they both sat down and looked at it through each other's eyes, and they understood it, oh. And all this tension in their energy fields just went whoosh. And the energies were smooth again. That smoothness is when there's no issue between you. There's no judgment between you. There's a knowing, a connection between you. And you have no agenda on the other person. Your relationship's going to go whoosh, smooth. So we're going to reiterate just briefly. Step into, and with conflict, step into your observer self. Do not defend, justify. Do not judge. Do not bring your ego in and insist on having ego validation, or rather to be seen as important or significant. Don't take it personally. If somebody else says something to you that seems to be a bit harsh, you can go, ouch. You can even say, did you intend for that to go? Did you intend to kind of stab me a bit there? Most of the time, if it's somebody who cares about you, they're going to say, what? No. It's very important in a conscious relationship to take these motivations, these little games, these little pieces. We cleared a whole bunch of them out of you, out of your solar plexus. If you noticed how there's lots of little pieces going around. When you're in a relationship and you've got the social integrators working, all these little motivations. And very important, as far as motivation is concerned, be clean about your motivations. Know why you're doing what you're doing. And then finally, as far as being set in a relationship, being able to create that sense of safety, you've got to be able to know your own motivations. And this is not just in the moment as to whether you're getting love or attention or affection or value from someone else, or trying to figure out what they think about you. That makes a relationship very unsafe. The channel's mother was always so insecure, and she was always just looking to find some word or tone of voice that would indicate that one of her daughters, that her daughters didn't love her. Obsessive on that. Well, of course, what does that do? It's a manipulation, of course. So what it does is that anything that the channel could say to her mother had to be edited and cleaned up, for sure. It really taught her how to do this. It was a supreme annoyance, of course. And she didn't feel safe because if mother found something that she could jump on, then the channel was put on defensive, and then there was all this round, blah, blah, blah. But eventually she learned how to do it out of compassion, doing it consciously, and not feeling manipulated anymore. If you don't feel manipulated in a relationship, you can do just about just about anything. You can be comfortable, you can feel safe. Consciousness is the key, but the consciousness of the motivation. If you understand the motivation of your partner, you can feel safe. Now, very often when people have conflicts, they don't really seek to understand where their partner's really coming from with a loving and compassionate point of view. In the masses, those unwashed masses, unconscious people, the unconscious people just knee-jerk react as they were taught by the social integrators through their parents and siblings and friends and so on. So arguments continue, man code and woman code conflicting indefinitely. Relationships are painful. Breakups are hard. And when a couple actually goes into therapy together, they get both of them willing to do this. And if they can find a therapist or a counselor who can have equal compassion for both sides and help them hear where the other one is coming from and teach them that strategy, it can revive wounded relationships. You can do a lot of it on your own if your relationship has difficulty by being in your observer with love and compassion and assuming, okay, whatever they're saying is coming from the social integrator, I'm not going to take it personally. And it's a message to me. It's a mirror messaging to me. This is what I need to know. This is how what I need to know in order to respond, to get into my power, to be more who I am, to be more the light I am, to understand my motivations. I'm getting all the training I need right here. And when you approach it with that, instead of saying, that person, they just really get me. They get my goat. They just really make me angry, and they're trying to manipulate me, and they're so evil and so negative and blah, 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 blah. And probably every one of you has had a friend who went through a divorce and called their ex evil. Evil personified. That's my ex. I have the worst choice in relationships. I just seem to choose these worst people. Interesting. Interesting. What are they mirroring to you? What are they telling you? How did you respond to that? Well, they were trying to control me and manipulate me. Yeah. You were taking it very personally, weren't you? Yeah. No observer self, right? Just in the game. I'm going to fight. I'm going to fight. I'm going to justify. I'm going to rationalize. I'm going to judge. So you can just hear the social integrator going, yippee. Woohoo. This is a good high one. Yay. So now that you're free of a social integrator and now you have a clue how it works, looking at your motivations, getting rid of the slave driver and all the motivations out of guilt and fear, what are your motivations going to be now? We're going to set up a template. Set a template tomorrow for you to see what. What is this? Instead of that fantasy ideal, what's something realistic for you? But right now, think about your motivations in a relationship. What are you after? What's motivating you in a relationship? Think first about a love relationship. Where's your motivation for safety and security? Because it's got to be there somewhere. Most people, when they're young and immature and whatever, and they marry, They all have these beautiful fantasies. They think that, oh gosh, you know, maybe we can make that ideal, even though we look around us and nobody else has, but maybe we can. Maybe we will have that enchanted relationship that goes on forever and ever and everybody envies us. Maybe we can go there. Nah. But what's the motivation? Motivation for safety and security? I have somebody. I'm in a relationship. Somebody wants me. I'm valuable and important to somebody. Yeah. That's the ego talking, right? Safety, security. Somebody's going to take care of my needs. I'm going to get loved. Somebody's going to support me so I can do what I want to do. But you know, over the years, as you mature, your needs change, your motivation changes. You may still want that safety, security, but it looks and sounds a little different. I want financial stability. I want to get a momentum going. I want a really good life that continues. I want to belong. I want to raise children, or I want to be part of a community. I want to whatever. But now, what is your motivation now in a relationship? You don't need safety and security from another person, really. On an emotional level, you can create it all for you by recognizing that this is your reality and it's beneficial and benevolent for you. Without judging you or other or someone else, you're feeling safe. You don't need it from someone else. You don't need someone else to belong. You don't need someone else to survive. You may choose by preference someone else. So what is it you are motivated for in a relationship? Communication? Sex? Lifestyle sharing? Companionship, good friendship, intimacy, and all those are very good things because it gives you the opportunity to love and care, the giving and the receiving, and to receive from another. To gift another a peerage, to make them, allow them to be equal to you, to not parent them or get dependent on them as parents to you. So you don't play child, parent, child anymore. And adolescent, you don't do that either, where they give you what you need as far as sex and appreciate how you look and you look so good together and you can have fun together. Yeah, that's good. That's good. But you want everybody else to see it. This is how the relationship should be for everybody. Of course not. Every relationship's unique. But that gets into the adolescence and the ego. The young adult wants the things, the forms, wants it to appear good. One of the dear ones we spoke with was a psychologist in private practice. She was continuously critical of her husband. And she, in a sense, loved the image of having a man. They would go on vacation. She'd have to pay for everything. He hardly made a dime. But she was devastated when he ran off with another woman. How could he? How could he? leave. Leave her. It looked so good. She lost the image. That was sometimes, for the most part, that was the worst part of it. She didn't have the man, form, in the nice big house, form, that went on vacations together and they looked really good together, form. And everybody looked up to her because she had this great life, form. Young adult. Her motivation was for her relationship to look good. If it just looked good, surely it would be good. And it wasn't. They fought bitterly, year after year. It's amazing he lasted in that relationship as long as he did. She kept shaming him, judging him, telling him where he went wrong and what he needed to do to fix himself. How long can a person tolerate that when their ego is weak and they need some kind of significance? Then it's an either or. This person gets all the significance and this one doesn't. You gift peerage to your partner. Equality to your partner. That they are as significant and as important as you are. You are you. You let them be them. And then you get together and enjoy each other. Enjoy each other's company, presence, energy. The channel and Daniel can just kind of sit, do their thing in the same room and not talk for a long stretch. There's no need to. This is something is common for what they call old couples, you know. They've been together for so long. There's not really much to say. But it's fine. There's no issues, no problems. Let's just be together. How's that? We just be, and it feels good. It feels good just to be together. That's just nice. Harmony. Just to be in the harmony, to bask in the harmony, bask in the smoothness of the relationship. So, seek the other's point of view. Seek to understand where they're coming from and give them plenty of rope. Don't make assumptions quickly. Know that whatever response your partner has, they are making it to the best of their ability. And they have choices in what response or reaction they make. And they're making the one that they think is going to make them happier. It has nothing to do with you. Again, they're thinking about themselves all the time, just like you think about yourself all the time. Understand what is a social integrator hook that they are going through. Do they need ego significance? Do they feel that they need to be on track to this ideal? And so they need to be smart and capable and so forth as they see themselves to be able to achieve the ideal? Are they struggling with failure and they're angry about it? Okay. The most difficult part. The most difficult part of relationships has to do with the underlying energies of shame. If you're carrying around a little edge of guilt and you're very careful trying not to offend anybody, what kind of people are you going to be hanging around with? People who are easily offended. Okay? You know people who are easily offended? You can get on their bedside just like so. If you say a word wrong or something, it's like they look at you like you're scurrilous. Underneath guilt, underneath a sense of apology for yourself, somewhere in there. Apology for being different than the crowd, for being unique, for you being the odd person, the fringy, the new ager, whatever. There's an apologetic piece. Underneath that is shame. Shame that is anchored down with this feeling, this underlying feeling, this drumbeat of just haven't done enough, you haven't achieved enough, you haven't done enough, you're not good enough, you haven't, you know, you're not smart enough, you're blah, 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 something's not right because your life isn't perfect yet. You haven't achieved your dreams yet. Shame on you. And you carry this around. Recognize that your partner probably has it too. We've had many conversations with women over the years. And it's amazing that their complaints about their relationships and their request to have assistance and support in relationships always has the same pattern. That somehow or another they're asking their man for something, or they expect something of their man, and he reacts with hostility, or he shuts down, withdraws, or manipulates, or attacks. And then, you know, they say, but I want to understand this. And so they keep asking questions. And a man, trained in the man code, when you keep asking him questions, he says, uh-oh, they're digging around in my weakness. They will find my sore spot. They will find the place of advantage. And they will hurt me. And they will control me. I will not let them do that. That's all men are trained. Men are trained to be this way, right? So they respond with hostility. Well, this doesn't stop the woman asking questions. Women think, I haven't asked the right question yet. I need to understand why they're being hostile. I need to dig in there and find out what's going on. That's the very last thing they want, right? No, you do not dig. No digging. Walls are up. Do not go any further. Forbidden territory. No, but I really got to know. Why? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? That's what girls do with each other. What, you know, what are you going through? Silence. Hostility. Defensiveness. Well, you did this and so forth, and you did that, and you're doing this wrong. Wait a minute. That's not what we're talking about. I want to know where you're coming from. Well, if you would stop doing all this and that and the other and the questions, and that'd be really nice. But you're not sharing with me. How can we have a great relationship if we don't share? Please, will you do this? Will you do that? Can we do that? Can we go there? Can we do this? I want you to make decisions. I want you to tell me what you feel, what you think. Give me your feelings. Well, frankly, the women will go and pester the guys, and at some point, the guys will blow. They'll not just be hostile or slightly defensive. They'll go on full frontal blow. They'll have a rage snit, attack. The channel calls it going limbic because the limbic brain says fight or flight. And so they choose fight. Right? So there they are, and they have put out all their swords and all their spikes. And the energy is like blazing red, and they're ready to fight now. Okay. And they will scream, and they can holler, and they can jump up and down, they can throw things, crash things, and they accuse the woman of this and that and the other, and the woman just gets, and shrinks down and intimidated, shrink in fear, the intensity of it, scary, the volume of it, devastating. He doesn't love me. Goes down into shame. Never aware that she came really close to sticking the knife in his shame spot. Right there. Stick it right in. He's doing everything he can to distract, defend, and keep her away from his shame. If you can understand this, you will understand human behavior better than anybody, just about. Better than most psychologists. Why does a guy get absolutely bent in rage and go kill a whole bunch of people? Somewhere in there, he will realize, oh my God, what have I done? When the rage blows off, when the limbic brain calms down, he realizes he's just made a big mess. Most of these guys turn the gun on themselves. Most of them. It's rare to catch them. And just recently there was a guy who was a rapist murderer. They caught him, put him in prison. How it happened, nobody knows, but he somehow got what he needed and hanged himself in his prison cell.